WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 4th of December. This is Arthur. And I have a couple of shows this morning, but I'm running a bit behind. Give me just one second. Sorry about that. First up is going to be episode 2 of Box 13. It's called The Insurance Fraud Scheme. Had an original air date of the 29th of August, 1948.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Box 13, Box 13, Box 13, Box 13.
Well, this is great. We come to the park to get a hot idea, but the day turns out hot, and my idea turns out cold. Idea. Well, I thought I'd find something different in a public park, and I did. A small boy mashing his ice cream cone against my brand new trousers. And all to meet a deadline. Deadline. Story idea. Why didn't I do what I should have done in the first place?
Copy, boy.
Hi, Mr. Holliday.
Hiya.
Hey, Smith, where's the lead on that fire?
Hiya, Mr. Holliday.
What do you say, Bill?
Come towards that interview.
Hiya, Dan.
How are you, Joe?
Where's the makeup on stage 4?
Hiya, Holliday.
What's a good word, boy?
Hiya, Mr. Holliday.
Hiya, Susie. Anything in Box 13?
Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday. Now for Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Go to the park and get a story idea about romance. Sure, why not? What do I come back with? Gravel in my socks, sand in my shoes, and a June bug in my hat band. Holliday, why didn't you pick a different profession like driving a coal truck?
Mr. Holliday.
What's that, Susie?
I said, there's a message in Box 13 for you.
Oh, thank you, Susie. Thanks so much.
Don't mention it. Say, you got a faraway look in your eyes today.
Yes, but only as far as the dry cleaners.
Dry cleaners?
Have you ever had a small boy wipe his ice cream cone off on your trousers?
Oh, girls don't call them trousers. In our set, it's slacks.
So it is, Susie, so it is. Well, see you later.
Okay, if you say so. But I still don't like that look in your eyes. You look like you might get into trouble.
You know what I think after spending the day in the park?
What?
Trouble will be a welcome relief. Why did I ever have to decide to be a fiction writer? I could have stayed a newspaper reporter. I could have kept on writing those snappy obituary notices and worn a hat that turned up in front and shoes that did the same thing. Well, better see what's in this envelope. If you want real adventure, be at the corner of 7th and Main at 10 p.m. tonight. A black limousine will pick you up at that time. Do not try to engage the chauffeur in conversation. What's this? No signature. Oh-ho, no signature. Black limousines, chauffeurs who won't talk. Meetings on street corners at 10 o'clock at night. Well, this should be interesting. There's a black limousine. Look at that chauffeur.
This way, Mr. Holliday.
Thanks. What a character this driver is. He looks like he spent his nights on a nice cold slab down at the morgue. Wonder if I can get him to talk.
Driver. I said driver. Chauffeur. Oh, you.
Pardon me.
Through there, Mr. Holliday.
So you do talk. I was beginning to wonder about that.
This way, Mr. Holliday.
Who's that?
It's only me, Mr. Holliday.
That black suit, it makes you almost invisible, you know.
Yes, I know. Follow me. You're curious about the way you were brought here. Did it frighten you?
Maybe. Maybe not.
This room, please. My office.
Well, this is very cozy.
Well, I'm glad you find it so. To eliminate a lot of questions, I'd like to say this. I know all about you.
All?
You're a successful writer. Apparently, you fear nothing, and I would presume that some of your adventures spring from that ad you run every week in the Star Times.
Did you find it interesting?
Adventure wanted. We'll go any place, do anything. Do you catch many people with that ad?
I caught you. Or is that vice versa?
I had you investigated, Holliday. I know where you live, what you do. The newspapers have told me of your experiences.
What are you leading up to?
You'll notice I had you brought here by a devious route. I wanted to be sure no one knew you were here.
Go on.
How much do you know about insurance, Holliday?
A great many people buy it. A great many don't.
And of those who do buy, a great many intend to defraud, to steal from their insurance company.
Now look, this is a racket. I'm not interested.
My name is Abner Blake. I'm the chief investigator for Northern Insurance.
Oh.
Do you remember the disappearance of Dr. Max Alexander?
I read something about it. Why?
He carried a very large policy with us. He's been gone almost 7 years. When his 7 years are up, the law will permit his widow to collect. And Holliday.
Yes?
I don't think Alexander is dead.
This man has the coldest, frostiest eyes of any professional man trailer I've ever seen. And he's loaded with energy. Energy which I'll bet has helped him track down the people who tried to cheat his insurance company. Boy, I'm glad I'm on his side.
If you'll think back, Dr. Alexander performed a very delicate brain surgery on a prominent man. The operation was not successful.
I remember that. He was criticized in some circles for taking a chance.
Immediately after the patient died, Alexander walked out of the operating room, the hospital, and so far as we've been able to prove, right out of this world. But I still feel that he's alive, somewhere.
And you believe it's an insurance fraud?
I'm sure it is. And I have a reputation, Holliday. No one has ever attempted to defraud Northern Insurance and has been successful.
You, suspect Mrs. Alexander?
Hardly. She's barely left her house in all these years. She receives no mail except from her daughter.
Her daughter?
She lives in New Mexico.
What about your regular men?
They've looked everywhere. They've come up with absolutely nothing.
Police?
Same thing.
And you're afraid you'll have to pay off?
No. Not if I have a smart man, a resourceful one, a man who can be as relentless as I am. And I think that man is you.
If Shakespeare were alive, he would cast Abner Blake in the role of Macbeth and throw him an extra part as one of the witches. But that's no affair of yours, Mr. Holliday. You've got to find a man who's been gone for almost 7 years. And if you were the hero of this story, you'd go to the files of a newspaper and look into the past.
Well, if it isn't Dan Holliday, what are you doing down the morgue at the Star Times?
What would anybody be doing down in the morgue, Mac?
Well, some of them just lay there. You know me, Dad. I just got to have my little joke once in a while. Now, what was it you're looking for?
Oh, the clips on a citizen named Dr. Max Alexander. What have you got on him?
The works, Dan. The whole works.
Prominent man dies following delicate operation. Doctor criticized for taking chance. Dr. Alexander walks out of operating room and disappears. Grief-stricken wife employs private investigators when police fail to find Dr. Alexander. Dr. Alexander given up for dead. Not a bad-looking citizen, the doctor. He's been shot from more angles in this Philadelphia, Atlantic City. Kindly eyes, intelligent face, strong chin. Yes, doctor, when I see you, I'll know you. And I hope to see you soon.
Yes?
Oh, I'm Dan Holliday, Miss Alexander. I'd like to talk to you about your husband.
My husband is dead.
Well, some people think he isn't.
They found something. They think he's alive. Come in. Now then, Mr. Holliday, who are you? And why are you looking for the doctor?
A commission from the insurance company. I hoped you might give me some information.
It was on all the front pages.
That's exactly as it happened.
Yes. He was never seen again. Oh, Mr. Holliday, if only you could find some trace of him.
I'm going to try.
You don't know how terrible it is. Almost 7 years. But still, I've had the feeling that he'll come back someday. He'll look for me, too.
Well, of course.
I miss him so.
What about your daughter?
After her father's disappearance, she couldn't stand it here in town. She went to our ranch in New Mexico.
Oh?
Her father's disappearance broke her heart. I pray you find him.
Mrs. Alexander, so do I. Mrs. Alexander is a grief-stricken old lady. One who sincerely wants her husband back. So, where to look first? This is the build-up to the main story, Holliday, and if you're smart, you'll bring in all the characters.
Where to, mister?
I want a drawing room. To Albuquerque, New Mexico. Well, Holliday, you've got a railroad ticket and an hour to make the train. Better get back to your apartment. A quick shower, pack your bag, and get on your way.
We've been waiting for you, Mr. Holliday.
Well, gentlemen, is this a pleasant intrusion? And I hope you are gentlemen.
We were positive you wouldn't mind.
Oh, of course not. People break in here regularly.
Good. Sit down.
If you don't mind, I like the air up here.
As you wish. I understand you like to travel, Mr. Holliday.
Travel? A wonderful pastime, travel.
Ever think of South America?
Often. You see, I'm a Carmen Miranda fan.
How would you like to go to South America? For me, all expenses paid. For as long as you want to stay.
What would I have to do?
Just forget a few things.
Like New Mexico?
Particularly New Mexico.
Give me about 2 weeks and I'm your man.
You don't seem to understand. You're leaving tonight.
Well, that's what I mean. But I'm going west.
No, south.
You and I would make a nice compass together. Now, suppose you point north and walk right out of this apartment. Oh, and don't forget your gorilla.
You mean Spencer?
If that's his name, I mean Spencer.
You'll hurt his feelings talking that way.
Well, that makes us even. Just looking at him hurts mine.
Is it South America?
In a way. At least I'm showing you the open-door policy.
Now get out, you and your gorilla.
Spencer.
I wouldn't recommend that.
So?
I said get out.
Have you ever stopped to consider something, Mr. Holliday?
What?
You may never get to New Mexico.
You are listening to Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday. And now, back to Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Now you've got all the ingredients for a story. Insurance investigator doesn't believe doctor is dead. Wife doesn't believe doctor is dead. Two men try to stop Ryder from making further investigation. All right, Holliday. Write the rest of the plot.
Or maybe you'd better hit the sack. This is very pleasant. I've got a comfortable drawing room, and I'll bet it's got a thousand springs to ease my worries. Uh-oh. The man with the urge to send me to South America. Well, I've got something for him. Go.
Now, fellow, what's the big idea breaking in here?
I'm sorry. I must have come into the wrong drawing room.
You came into the wrong apartment a couple of hours ago. Now, what do you want?
I just want to go to sleep.
In my traveling bag?
I was looking for my razor. I wanted to shave.
You just had a close one. Come on.
Where?
To find out if you got space in this train. If you haven't, we'll make some for you. Under guard in the baggage car. This is fine. I couldn't prove a thing. My friend had space, and to the conductor, it seemed like a perfectly logical thing to mistake car 19 for car 18. I wonder who this man is and who's in back of him.
Next stop, Albuquerque.
Albuquerque. Well, that's the end of the line for me. And I hope I don't mean that too literally. Long distance? I want to speak to Catherine Alexander at the Bar Cross Bar Ranch just outside of Belmont. Yes.
Hello?
Miss Alexander?
Yes?
This is Dan Holliday. Wonder if I might come out to the ranch and see you.
Oh, you're the man who's looking for Father. Mother wired me about you.
Was it complimentary?
Mother said she believed if anyone could find Dad, you could. Come right out. I want to talk to you.
And I want to talk to you.
Cab, mister?
Yeah, ever hear of Valmont?
Sure did.
Know where it is?
Sure do.
Very far?
Sure is.
Can you take me there?
Sure can. You got enough money to pay for the trip?
Sure have.
Let's go, then.
Sure thing. This is New Mexico, Holliday. Breathe deeply and treat your lungs to a shot of sprayed ozone. 20 miles to Valmont, and all you've seen on the whole trip is four buzzards, three in the air, and the one driving. And if he's a cab driver, I'm a flying disc.
Car behind.
Yeah, so I hear.
Wants me to pull over.
Don't do it.
Know them fellas?
One of them is Spencer.
Friend of yours?
That depends on what you mean by friend.
I gotta pull up. Those guys are gonna run me into the ditch.
Can you fight?
Nope.
Then can you recommend a good dentist?
What for?
Something tells me that when this is over, I'm going to need a new set of teeth.
You feel better, young man?
Yeah, thanks. What happened after those two fellas jumped me? Who are you?
My name is Moran. I'm the caretaker up at the Bar Cross Bar Ranch. I was coming down this way when you were forced off the road.
Oh, what happened to the driver?
Last I saw of him, he was just a cloud of dust.
I remember now. I got out of the car. He drove away.
Those two fellows started to beat you up good. When they saw me coming, they ran off, too. You had a mighty close call, young man.
I had three of them. After this, my luck runs out.
Somebody after you?
And vice versa. Say, how far is the ranch?
Half a mile up the road. Better take it easy.
Come on, I've got to get to the ranch.
Feel you can make it?
My friend, I've got to make it. This is not good. Spencer and his girl have followed me all the way out here trying to stop me at every turn. Maybe I'm getting warm. But if that's true, why hasn't someone else found Dr. Alexander?
Here's the ranch house, Mr. Holliday. You say Miss Catherine was expecting you?
Yes, but hardly in this condition.
You're Dan Holliday. Oh, what happened? You're all beaten up.
So this is Catherine Alexander. What a beautiful girl. And what beautiful eyes.
You'd better lie down, Mr. Holliday. You're badly hurt.
Oh, no, thanks, Miss Alexander. I don't feel that bad. I just look that way.
Anything more I could do, Miss Kathy?
Oh, no. No, thank you so much. If you hadn't come along, Mr. Holliday might have been badly injured. Perhaps fatally.
Thank you, Miss Kathy.
Now then, how about a hot shower? You can get a rub down and change of clothes.
Miss Alexander, you read a man's mind.
Sometimes that's a pleasure. Depending on the man.
You're depending on me?
What do you think?
Well, this is more like it. Hot shower, brisk rub down, little iodine on a few... Ouch, ouch, it stings. And Catherine was kind enough to loan me some riding clothes. That should indicate a sojourn in the saddle out on the desert. With the stars blinking their approval of my companion. Blinking approval? Holliday, you're an incurable romantic.
Isn't this beautiful? That gorgeous sky and the stars.
You love it, don't you?
I always have. Always will.
Have you been here long?
The Bar Cross Bar belonged to my dad. We used to come out during the summer. Now I live here all the time.
Alone?
Oh, there's always Moran.
Moran? He's a strange old fellow.
People around here say he's a little attached. But he's been wonderful to me.
Oh, say, those men who jumped me down the road. Moran ever seen him before?
How could he? They were strangers.
Oh. Your mother told me you've been searching for your father a long time.
Yes. Mother and I have spent a fortune on private detectives, investigators, following up leads, but nothing ever happened.
Yes, I know. Oh, tell me, Miss Alexander.
Kathy, please.
Kathy, have you any idea where I might begin to look? I thought you might give me a starting point.
Not unless it would be back in the city. He just walked out one day. No one ever saw him again.
Well, I'd better go back there and start from scratch.
You don't have to leave right away.
I'd enjoy staying a while.
Maybe I have been lonesome. Perhaps I've forgotten what companionship can be.
Perhaps.
You'll stay a while?
A while.
Good. Say, the time. We'll be much too late for dinner. Come on, I'll race you.
You're on.
Hurry or I'll beat you. I'm at the corral gate already.
Kathy, look out! Kathy.
Mr. Holliday, what happened?
You were racing. The horse stumbled over that lower bar and threw her. Look at that gash in her head.
She's unconscious. I I hope she isn't seriously hurt.
Oh, stand there, man. Get into the house. Call a doctor.
Yes, a doctor. A doctor.
Hurry, will you?
Of course. Get into the medicine cabinet in the house. I need some bandages. She may be suffering from multiple contusions.
Multiple contusions?
Or even a compound skull fracture. Hurry, will you?
Compound skull fracture?
All right, I don't know if you can find it. Hurry, I said. There isn't much time.
Okay, Dr. Alexander.
You are listening to Box 13, starring Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Back in the city again, walking up the street towards that same grim gray house where I first met Abner Blake. Up the steps, Holliday, and write the final chapter.
That was a nice job, Holliday.
I was nice about it.
What do you mean?
You didn't see the look in Dr. Alexander's eyes when he recovered his mind. And that lovely, lovely girl being mixed up in a deal like this.
If you feel sorry for her, you're making a big mistake.
Yes, I know. She was following him the day he walked out into the country. She'd almost caught up with him when a hit-and-run driver knocked him down.
That's when she got the idea for the disappearance act.
Why not? The doctor's face had been so damaged no one would ever recognize him. And he'd lost his memory to top it off.
We've got the daughter and the mother in custody.
Just think, if she hadn't have fallen off that horse, I might never have been able to prove that Dr. Alexander was alive.
I know.
Hiding him on his own ranch was the daughter's idea, too.
Why not? No one would pay attention to an old man puttering around the place.
I've got a story, and I don't like it. Mother and daughter hide amnesia victim to collect insurance.
Well, excuse me. Blake speaking. Yes, he's here. For you, Holliday.
Oh, thanks. Hello.
Mr. Holliday, this is Susie.
Oh, yes, Susie.
There's a message for you in Box 13. Shall I read it to you?
Now, Susie, you know you're not supposed to open my mail.
But this is already open. It's a postcard.
Oh. Is it interesting?
I think it is.
All right, come on, come on. Tell me what it says.
It says, rental for Box 13, $15.
Oh, fine. Goodbye, Susie.
Next week, same time, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13.
Box 13, the insurance fraud scheme, original air date of the 29th of August, 1948. It was also episode 2. I was kind of intrigued by this particular drama. I played it once several weeks ago, the first episode. I gotta do a little PSA here. The WMFO donations drive is still in full swing. Go to WMFO.org and click on the Donate tab. Fill out the Donations Drive Google form and then follow the link at the bottom of the form to the Tufts Giving page to make your monetary contribution. Specific directions on how to donate to the WMFO... Actually, specific directions on how to donate to WMFO on the Tufts Giving page are included next to the link within the Google form. Help support the station and everything we do. Yes, as the donations drive is going to be going on through the 17th of December. This is Arthur, and you're listening to the Grand Hour here on WMFO 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Next up, I'm going to have episode 35 of my personal favorite drama, The Six Shooter. This one's titled Blood Relations, set an original air date of the 27th of May, 1954. Thanks for listening.
In a moment, you'll hear James Stewart as the Six Shooter, just one of many fine programs brought to you each week on NBC. Tomorrow night, there's top comedy entertainment with the Bob Hope Show, the Phil Harris Alice Faye Show, and Can You Top This with Senator Ford. Bob Hope delivers rapid-fire comedy routines, while Phil Harris and Alice Faye bring both mirth and music. It's a great Friday night lineup of comedy programs, all of them heard only on NBC. James Stewart as the Six Shooter. The man in the saddle is angular and long-legged. His skin is sun-dyed brown. The gun in his holster is gray steel and rainbow mother of pearl, its handle unmarked. People call them both the Six Shooter. The NBC Radio Network presents James Stewart as the Six Shooter, a transcribed series of radio dramas based on the life of Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman who wandered through the Western territories, leaving behind a trail of still-remembered legends.
Years since last time I worked for the Wilcox outfit, but when George Wilcox wrote me about his pa's death and said he needed somebody to handle the cattle drive east to Abilene, well, there weren't exactly any other demands on my services, so I headed up to Adobe Junction and rode through the town to the Wilcox ranch a couple miles beyond. It was getting on toward evening when I pulled into the yard, and whoa, boy, Oscar, whoa. Only about 8 or 10 steers in the main corral over the back of the house. Well, maybe George hadn't finished the roundup yet, or maybe he was going to start the drive from out on the range. Whatever it was, he'd have to get started pretty soon or the weather would be against us. Good evening, ma'am. Is George Wilcox in?
Why, Mr. Ponson, don't you remember me?
Why?
I'm Viola Wilcox, George's sister.
Viola? No, you... Why, I just can't believe it.
Well, I guess I have changed since you last saw me.
Change? Why, say, well, you've practically grown up overnight, Viola.
There are some folks around here who wouldn't agree with you, Mr. Ponson.
Oh?
Who is it, Vi?
It's Mr. Ponson, George.
Britt? Why, Britt, boy, you old rattlesnake. It's about time you turned up here.
How are you, George?
Pretty good, pretty good. Put on another plate, Vi. Britt will be here for supper.
Oh, I wouldn't like to impose. Now, I mean, you probably weren't expecting me tonight.
Why, we've been expecting you for the last week. Vi's had the spare room ready since Monday.
Well, if you're sure there's enough food, Viola.
Oh, there'll be plenty, Britt. Matter of fact, I won't be eating supper at home tonight.
Now, Viola, I told you weren't...
I'll call you when everything's ready.
I guess we might as well wait in the parlor, Britt.
Sure. Sure, I hope I'm not too late for the drive, George.
Late?
Well, you said you'd been expecting me for several days, and I didn't see much stock in the corral.
Oh, the boys are still out on the roundup. They're a little late. I couldn't go out with them this year.
Oh, that's all?
They'll probably show up sometime tomorrow, or Friday at the latest. You can start off then.
You won't be going long?
No. I'm going to stick around here.
Uh-huh. I was real sorry to hear about your father, George.
He went easy, Britt. I'm thankful for that.
Yeah. You know, I just can't get over how Viola's changed. Why, she's turned out to be a real pretty young lady, hasn't she? I'll bet she's got more beaux than any other girl in the whole county.
She could have, I guess, if she wanted them.
What?
Britt, do you remember Judd Coffin?
Coffin? Coffin?
He was that outlaw from up around Cloud City. You had something to do with capturing him, as I recollect.
Well, I was sort of in the neighborhood when it happened.
I was just a kid then, but Pa took me over to Cloud City to see Coffin's trial and hanging afterward. I guess he figured it'd be a good lesson for me.
Uh-huh.
He was right, too. I never forgot it. There's something else I never forgot either. The way Judd Coffin looked. His eyes. His nose. Everything about him. He was born to be a killer. It was writ all over him.
No, I don't know now, George.
Well, I do. And now he's back here again.
Well, what are you talking about? Judd Coffin was hung. You saw it yourself. You just said so, George.
Judd had a brother. A few years younger. I don't remember his name, but I saw him at the trial, too.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yeah, now that you mention it, it seems to me there was another Coffin boy. What about him?
There's a young fella started working for the mercantile in Adobe Junction, and if he ain't...
Everything's on the table, George. Just stack the dishes when you finish eating, and I'll do them when I get home.
Now, you hold up a minute, Viola.
See you later, Britt. Night.
Come over here, Britt. Over here to the window.
What?
There he is in that buggy. Now, you take a good look.
Well, I... What's...
Now, don't he look just like Judd?
Well, it's been quite a while, George. I've sort of forgotten Judd Coffin.
Well, I ain't forgot him. I couldn't, not ever. I can still see him when they led him up to them gallows. I can still see his eyes, killer's eyes. And that's his brother out there riding away with my sister, ain't it? Well, ain't it?
Well, maybe he does sort of resemble Judd in a way, but why...
It's more than a resemblance, Britt. I've seen him up close. He's a spitting image.
Well, I don't see what difference it makes, George, unless he's been causing trouble, and even then...
Britt... He's only been around here for a couple of months. Just give him time. He'll cause plenty of trouble.
Maybe so. But now listen, George.
Britt, if a man's got bad blood in him, it's bound to come out sooner or later. It's bound to.
George, it seems to me a fellow ought not to be blamed for what his brother's done.
If he ain't up to something, then why don't he admit who he is?
What do you mean?
Says his name's Hank Wallace. Says he never heard of Judd Coffin.
Well, he ought to know.
He's lying, Britt. You saw the resemblance yourself.
Well, resemblance doesn't always prove anything, you know.
You think I want a man like that going around with my own sister? Why, she's barely 18. She don't know nothing about the world or about people. I'm all she's got now. I can't let her throw her life away on Judd Coffin's brother. I've got to stop her.
Yeah, I guess she is sort of your responsibility. But, George, how about that supper? I'm kind of hungry.
You go ahead, Britt. I ain't got much appetite.
Oh, all right.
Britt?
Yeah?
Maybe this sounds like I'm butting into Vi's business, but I got no choice. Just before he died, Pa warned me, told me what would happen.
No?
Britt, it wasn't 6 weeks after the funeral before she started going around with this fella. I tried to talk sense to her. It don't do no good. Now I gotta put my foot down. You understand how I feel, don't you, Britt?
Yes, George. Sure, I understand. Well, I went ahead and had some supper. Cold ham, potato salad with bacon in it, and stewed peaches for dessert. Wasn't anything exceptional, but it was filling enough. And afterwards, since George hadn't eaten anything, I decided maybe I'd go ahead and do the dishes. The dishpan was hanging right beside the sink, so I pumped some water in it. There was only a couple of plates and cups to wash. But the handle on that cup just wasn't very substantial, and when it slipped... Oh, doggone it. Well, looked like it was beyond the gluing stage, so I kind of got the pieces swept together and put them in the garbage bucket. I wasn't exactly trying to hide them or anything like that, but, there were plenty of other cups in the cupboard. Anyhow, I walked back into the parlor and said goodnight to George and went upstairs to bed. I figured he was going to wait up for Viola, and I didn't suppose she'd like the idea, but it wasn't any of my business, so... I was kind of tired anyway. Viola sure didn't like it either. At least that's how it sounded to me when I woke up about 1 o'clock and heard her and George going at it hammer and tongs in the downstairs hallway.
None of your business what I do or where I go.
I'm your brother, Viola.
Well, you're not my keeper.
He's no good.
If he was, he wouldn't keep you out until all hours of the night.
Staying out was my idea. I didn't want to come home because I knew I'd have to sit here and listen to you.
Well, you're gonna listen. I told you who he was, but you wouldn't believe me. Now maybe you'll believe Britt.
Don't drag him into this. Please. Please, George.
Britt? Britt, are you still awake?
George, I asked you not to.
Britt?
Yeah? Yeah, what's trouble?
Would you mind coming down here?
Well...
It'll only take a minute, Britt.
Well, I... All right, George. All right, give me a chance to put my pants on. I sure didn't like the idea of mixing into a family argument, but I didn't look like I was going to get any sleep till George had simmered down, so I pulled on my trousers and I slapped a little cold water in my face. Then I headed out in the hall. I could see Viola standing at the bottom of the stairs, and her face was real white, and her eyes were kind of wide open and determined. George was holding onto her arm.
I was running around with some girl.
The way his
town.
Jaw was set, well, he
just
as determined
care.
As she
be
was.
Any of my business.
Well, I do care. It's for your own good, Vi.
Well, good evening, Viola.
Mr. Ponson, I'm awful sorry that you have to get involved in this. And I'm ashamed, too.
Well, you ought to be.
Not for myself. I'm ashamed for you, George.
For me? I'm not running around with no outlaw disgracing my family. Britt, you tell her. Tell her who he really is.
Now, George, I never saw the man before in my whole life.
You noticed the resemblance right off, didn't you? You remarked on it. That man, Jug Coffin's brother, Vi.
Is that what you got Mr. Ponsett down here to tell me?
Well, ain't that reason enough?
No, it's not enough.
He's been lying to you, pretending to be somebody else. Don't you care?
He hasn't lied to me, George. I know who he is. I've known it since we first met. He told me he was Hunt Coffin.
He told you?
He was afraid folks around here would hold it against him. That's why he changed his name. And it looks to me like he was right.
You knew who he was and you went right on seeing him?
Can't you understand, George? He's not to blame for something his brother did. They're two different people.
The same blood's in him that was in Judd Coffin. And he'll turn mean and pull the same kind of stunt his brother did, and he'll end up the same way.
Oh, that's crazy. Why, he doesn't even carry a gun. You've seen him often enough. You know he doesn't.
He can get a gun easy enough, and he will. The very first time he figures he needs one.
Mr. Ponsett, won't you talk to George? Maybe you can make him see that I'm not a child, that I know my own mind.
Well, it seems to me we've all done enough talking for one night. Anyway, I sure could use a little more sleep. You know, things may look different in the morning. Don't you think so? You know.
Mr. Ponsett's right. We'd better go to bed, too.
Things won't be any different tomorrow, Vi, not as far as I'm concerned. I'm telling you here and now, you're not to see young Coffin again, ever.
I'm going to marry him, George.
What?
I wasn't intending to tell you yet. I thought maybe later you'd come around, but I guess you never will. I promised him tonight.
Promised him? You don't know what you're saying, Vi.
George, let's go!
You're just doing this to spite me, ain't you? Well, I'll teach you.
I'm in love with him.
In love with a man like that? Oh. I'll slap the sense into you, but take me all night.
Hey, George, now get a hold of yourself.
You heard what he said, Rat. She's going to marry him. Or she'll be singing a different tune before...
No, wait a minute. Will you stay out of this, George?
She's my sister.
I don't care whose sister she is. Now, let go of her.
All right now, George, come on. Let's go upstairs.
It's for her own good, Britt, what I done.
Well, I guess you must have thought it was.
Someday she'll realize it was for her own good. She can't marry him, Britt, she just can't.
Well, treating her the way you did is apt to make her more set on it than ever.
She'll get over that idea fast enough now that she knows I mean business. Someday she'll thank me for slapping her.
Yeah. All right, let's get some sleep, George. Come on.
You are listening to The Six Shooter, starring James Stewart as Britt Ponsett, the Texas plainsman whose name has become legend throughout the West. Now, Act Two of the story called Blood Relations.
Well,
took me a little while to get back to sleep, but I didn't hear anything more out of George or Viola during the night, so that was something. When I finally woke up again, I just didn't feel like I'd had any rest at all. And it was late, too, nearly 6 o'clock. I got dressed and I went downstairs. Viola was fixing breakfast. Her eyes were sort of red and there was a little splotch on her cheek where George had slapped her. But she didn't say anything about it. And I sure didn't see any point in opening up the subject. So. A couple of minutes later, George came in from doing his chores. And we all sat down at the table. He didn't eat much, just some coffee. And as soon as he was finished, he said he was riding out to the high grass to see if the roundup was on its way down. I offered to go along with him, so we got on our horses and started off.
You see, Brent, what'd I tell you?
Hmm?
She's all right now. She got that nonsense about young coughing out of her head.
Maybe so.
Well, she didn't mention him again, did she?
No.
I reckon if she were still thinking about him serious, she'd have said so.
Yeah, well?
She's a Wilcox, Brent. We don't go around making fools of ourselves. Not for long, anyway.
We kept on riding for a couple of hours until we got to the high ground. But we didn't see any signs of the roundup, so finally we turned around and headed back to the ranch house.
I don't know what's taking them so long. They should have been down a couple of days ago.
Oh?
If they don't show up by morning, we'll have to start looking for them.
Oh, whatever you say, George.
Here we are. Whoa, Frenchie. Whoa, boy. Whoa, whoa. Hey, you know something, Britt? I've got kind of an appetite.
Oh, I don't doubt it, the way you've been eating lately. Easy, Scar.
Easy.
Well, I'll sure make up for it this noon. I wonder what she's fixed for us. Vi? We're back, Vi. Must be out in the kitchen. That's funny. Vi?
Just a minute, George.
Oh, she's upstairs. That's why she didn't hear me. How about some food, Vi?
Well, I didn't know you'd be here. You didn't say anything when you left.
I'm usually here for dinner, ain't I?
Yeah. Well, it'll take a couple of minutes to get something ready. I just got back from town.
You what?
Well, I guess I'll go wash up.
What were you doing in town, Vi?
I wanted to see Hunt.
Oh. Well, I suppose you did have to explain things to him. I guess he was entitled to that much. How'd he take it?
Hmm?
When you told him you couldn't marry him.
I didn't tell him that, George. We're going to get married as soon as we can. He's coming to get me tonight.
Well, I sure didn't feel like sticking around for another one of their arguments, so I sort of sneaked out the front door and climbed into the saddle.
Let's go, boy. Come on. Come on.
I figured I'd ride in town and get me something to eat while I was at it. Maybe while I was gone, George and Viola would come to some sort of an understanding. At least I hoped they would. It took me about 30 minutes to reach Adobe Junction. Looked like there was only one cafe. Molly's Home Cooked Meal. It's right next door to the Mercantile. Whoa, boy. Whoa. Whoa, Scar. Whoa. Tossed the reins over a hitching rail and started into the restaurant.
Mr. Ponset?
Hmm?
You're Britt Ponset, ain't you?
That's right.
Viola told me what you looked like, but I'd have recognized you anyway.
Oh?
You're a six-shooter. I've heard a lot about that gun. How fast you are with it. My brother, well, he found out firsthand.
Your brother?
Judd Coffin.
I see.
My name is Hunt Coffin, Mr. Ponset.
Yeah, I sort of figured that.
I just wanted you to know I sure do appreciate what you did last night, taking Viola's part with George.
While George was pretty upset, I don't think he meant to carry on that way. He's real fond of his sister when you get right down to it.
If he ever hits her again, I'll kill him.
Well, I guess you and Viola won't have to worry much about George any longer.
What do you mean?
Well, she says you're going to get married right away. You're coming out after her tonight, is that right?
She told you that?
Well, sure.
That's true, isn't it?
Oh, I didn't want him to know. He'll try to stop us. I told her not to say anything. We could have been gone before he ever found out.
Now, Viola's not the kind of a person to do a thing behind anybody's back.
Yeah. Well, maybe there's something else he ought to know. I bought me a gun this morning, Mr. Ponsett.
Is that so?
I'll be out at the Wilcox place as soon as I get off work tonight. And I'll have the gun with me.
Huh? And George said you'd get a gun the first time you figured you needed one.
Well, he was right.
Yeah. It sure looks like he was. Well, so long, Coffin.
What in thunder happened to you, Brett?
Oh, I thought maybe you and Viola ought to have a chance to talk this out in private, so I rode in town.
You needn't have bothered.
Huh?
I tried to talk to her, but she just wouldn't listen.
She wouldn't, huh?
I don't know what to do, Brett. I just don't. After last night, I thought she'd see things my way. I guess you were right. She's more set in marrying him now than ever. If Paul was still alive, he'd find some way of stopping her. I guess I'm letting him down.
Well, where's Vi now?
Upstairs, packing. I thought about locking her in her room, but it just wouldn't do no good. Besides, she ain't to blame, not really.
That's right, George. A person just can't help it.
It's his fault. Everything that's happened. And it's him I'm going to take care of.
As a matter of fact, I ran into Hunt Coffin while I was in town.
You saw him?
Yeah, we had a little chat. He's kind of upset about what happened last night.
He's upset. He'll have something to get upset about if he comes around here tonight.
Well, maybe you ought to know, George. He's got himself a gun.
There. What'd I tell you? Just like his brother. Why? Why, your friend's coming out here with a gun. He needs to kill me. A man who'll take up a gun once, he won't stop. Not as long as he lives. Now what do you think of it?
Viola didn't answer George. She just stayed upstairs and went on with whatever she was doing. George walked into the hall. I heard him rummaging around in the closet. He was gone for a minute or so, and then he came back into the parlor. He was carrying his pa's old Winchester rifle. He jammed some cartridges into the magazine and stared out of the window. The sun was just beginning to drop behind the hills to the west, and the shadows on the slopes were turning orange. And George pulled up a chair and sat down. The rifle was lying on his lap, the barrel pointing toward the open window beside him. George?
Yeah?
You use that gun, you'll be doing the very thing you accuse him of.
There's a difference, Britt. This is my property. Pa left it to me outright.
Sure.
If Hunt Coffin sets foot on it, he's trespassing. I got a right to shoot a trespasser, ain't I?
No, you haven't. Not under these circumstances.
You gonna interfere? You gonna take his side?
I'm not taking anybody's side. I'm riding into town. I won't be back. You have to hire somebody else to handle your cattle drive.
Suits me. I'll be able to handle the cattle myself now. I won't have to stay here after tonight.
You know, George, he might kill you. Leastwise, if he takes after his brother, there's a good chance of it.
Well, it looks like you're going to be around for it, whatever happens.
What?
There he is now, pulling into the yard.
Coffin! Get out of here, Coffin! I don't want no trouble, Wilcox.
Well, then start moving.
I'm taking Viola with me.
You're not taking anybody.
I could see Hunt Coffin through the window over George's shoulder. He was climbing down from his buggy. It looked like he was carrying a .44 in his holster. George Wilcox stood up. His back shut off my view of Hunt. He shoved the stock of his rifle against his shoulder and his finger curled around the trigger. He shifted his weight onto one foot, and I got a glimpse of Hunt again.
His right hand was inching toward that .44, but he hadn't pulled it out yet.
I'm coming in and get her, Wilcox. Go on and draw. I know you got a gun. Go on, use it. I don't think I'll need it.
I gave him a chance. You heard me, Brady.
There wasn't much time to answer him. His finger was already squeezing back. There wasn't even time to get over to him. I grabbed for my gun.
Oh!
The bullet hit him right in the arm, spun him half around. For a second, I didn't know what had happened. I hadn't fired at him. I hadn't even had a chance to finish drawing. And then I saw a little spiral of smoke on the hall stairs behind him.
Viola.
Put down that rifle, George.
You're crazy, Vi.
Vi! Are you all right?
Stay there, hon. I'll be right out. Put it down, George. Now, I'm going away with Hunt. And if you come after me, it won't be Hunt who will stop you. Kind of funny, isn't it? You always said Hunt would turn out bad because his brother was that way. And they both had the same blood in them. What about it, George? Would you be willing to shoot me?
What are you talking about, Vi? You know I'd never do a thing like that.
Why not? I was willing to shoot you. We've got the same blood, haven't we? Goodbye, George. Goodbye, Mr. Ponson.
So long, Vi. Good luck.
Up, boy. Up. She wasn't making any sense, Britt, asking if I'd shoot her. Why, that's just plain foolishness.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I'll take you into town, George. You better see the doc about that arm.
My own sister. My own flesh and blood. Sure had her figured wrong.
Well, maybe you had young Coffin figured wrong, too. Come on, let's go. Well, the next morning, the boys brought in George's herd, and what with that arm of his and all, I agreed to drive them north. It was nearly 3 months before I got back to Adobe Junction again. Viola and Hunt, they were married and had a little house in town. But George, he hadn't been near me. Hadn't sent a word to Vi since that night she left the ranch. Vi was kind of upset about it, but she kept telling herself that sooner or later George would see where he'd been wrong and he'd come around. I don't know. Maybe he will. Maybe he will.
Episode 35 of The Six Shooter, Blood Relations. Original air date the 27th of May, 1954. The Six Shooter only ran for one season. This is Arthur. You've listened to The Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Tufts Freeform Radio. Thanks for listening. Carte Blanche Breakfast should be up next. Have a nice day.